us know I'll be pushed from the nest by her own hands. And when the rain comes crashing right in, things it can drown us, but somehow
everyone. You're listening to Eat Your Arts and Vegetables, an arts talk radio show. I'm Zoe LeBrun, and with me today is
Derek Breckner.
Hey, Zoe.
So, hot out there today, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Better than snow. So, today we've got two folks in today to interview. It's all part of our, I guess we can say that Fringe Festival is coming up. I believe the first day of the Fringe is the 17th, if I'm not mistaken. And it runs for just over a week, about 10 days, I think, right? So today we have two people here that are in charge of a project here. Their project involves a Shakespeare play. Two gentlemen of Verona, and they're here to talk about the project. We've got Dryden and David. You guys introduce yourselves, and yeah.
Hi, yeah, I'm Dryden Diltz, co-director.
I'm David Lang, the other co-director.
Great. So we've got so many things to talk about, I guess. So let's talk about. Is this, how are you kind of interpreting Shakespeare? Let's start with that.
We might need to go back a bit. The whole process kind of started, we didn't come into this saying, we want to direct this show. We were asked by our producer, Christian Leeson, who's operated the company and differently reformed for about 10 years, I want to say. He asked if we'd be interested in directing a show together. And then it just became, well, which one? And then from there, we just kind of did our research, figured out, okay, what hasn't been done lately, what could be fun to play with, and the two gentlemen of Verona. I don't know, David, but that title just stuck out to me as sounding very silly.
Yeah, so I had never actually read the play beforehand. I obviously heard it in passing, but I had no idea what it was. But as soon as he said the two gentlemen of Verona, I was like, all right, that's it. Let's go.
Yeah. So in terms of interpretation, the fun thing is it's one of Shakespeare's earliest works. It's not as well, known or, as something like Hamlet or Much Ado About Nothing, where it's like, people love those. They're top favorites. You need to treat them very respectfully. This one we're just kind of having a lot of goofy fun with. We've set it in a modern type of setting. The dialogue is still the same, but the costumes are modern. We've basically put it, it starts in a beachside town, goes into a country club, and then ends on the beach, kind of a wilderness setting. So it's, in terms of, interpretation, it's kind of all over the place. It's many ideas that in some productions people would say, I don't know, that might be a little silly, a little far-fetched. That's what most of the show is made of.
I mean, that's really fun, and I think it's a good way to kind of introduce this play to a lot of people who are not familiar with Shakespeare's earlier works. You guys are getting a deep cut with this play for sure. Mm-hmm. How do you expect audiences to kind of react to this funny little comedy of Shakespeare's?
Yeah, so our original idea when kind of going for shows, which one do we choose? We decided we have to do a comedy. It just works better for Fringe Festival. And then we settled on The Two Gentlemen of Verona. And then when Dryden pitched the idea of the beach town and the country club and the wilderness on the beach, my first thought was, that's not going to work, but let's just go with it anyway.
And okay, you didn't tell me that.
I was thinking, I was dreading it.
Okay.
And yeah, over the course of the last few months while we've been making the show, I'm sitting here, I'm like, I think a lot of the younger audience, our friends and whoever else, are going to absolutely love what's going on. We have a lot of throwback references. We have a lot of silly things that like may spark some nostalgia in a lot of our friends. I don't know how the traditional Shakespeare crowd is going to take it, but we're just going to hope for the best and hide any bad reviews. I don't know.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. Is this your first time co-directing a play for Fringe?
Yeah, actually,
first
ever.
First time directing.
Yeah, how has that process been?
Better than I was expecting, honestly. We had a pretty good stride, I think, kind of our dynamic. I joked, you're kind of the Roy Disney to my Walt Disney, in that I come up with the craziest ideas, and then you either say, yeah, let's go for it, or no, that's a bad idea.
There's been a lot more, yeah, let's go for it.
Yeah, yes, yes.
Yeah. Rule number one of improv, always say yes, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I think just that perfect partnership, because the play has ended up being, I think, I'm really proud of where it's at and where it's come.
Yeah.
And yeah, it would not have worked that way without either of us.
No. And speaking of that, without our head of tech, our stagehand, and our stage manager, absolutely no way the show would have taken off. We have all this like stupid ideas. They're the ones that ground us and it's like, hey, this is possible and this isn't. Stop even talking about it right now. So
yes, Michaela, Meg, and Emma, they are all either still in school or recent graduates, and so they've been, I felt bad for them at times, because some of these ideas, I'm looking at them like, tell me if this is a bad idea, you know, you can tell me if this isn't possible, and they're like, no, it's possible. So I just go, okay,
but it's not easy on them.
No.
So can you talk about process wise in terms of you know, your collaboration with the actors, and how much do they stay on script, and versus how much, as Zoe has mentioned, improvising, and where's the line for you guys in terms of keeping stuff in and letting stuff happen? Can you talk about that a bit, if you don't mind?
Yeah, for
reviewing
sure.
The process?
Yeah, I mean, so starting out, all the actors that we have with us, we've worked with before on Shakespeare productions, whether past Fringe shows, a show we did in December, or we just know from the theater community, and we trust them all. So when we were casting them, we're just like, okay, we know your talents, we know who you are, and we'd love to have you on the show. As for anything that's improv, a lot of the show, a lot of things you're going to see is kind of improv by the actors. We were very open to just being very like openly creative with everyone. It's like, if you have an idea, do it, and we're probably going to say yes, because we just want this to be silly for everyone and everyone have fun. Yeah, so like it's been great working with a lot of these actors. They have a lot of ideas to bring forth, and it's just worked with our show so well. In terms of being on script and all that stuff, we did torture them this past week with something we call the ball game. We got it from a director from our last show, and basically, yeah, the scene starts at the top. The actor who starts will hold the ball, say their line, and then they'll throw it to the next actor who speaks. And it goes back and forth with all the actors in the scene. If an actor messes up their line, if they hesitate too long, or if they throw the ball to the wrong person, the scene restarts and you keep going until you get that done.
Some scenes you run through only once or twice, some you run through 20 times before it's...
What happens if somebody drops the ball?
So they were more strict last year. If we drop the ball, it's literally and metaphorically dropping the ball and you have to restart. We were a little bit more lenient this year, just because it's like, well, we're yeah, theater actors, not athletes. So yeah.
Can you talk about the concept behind this strategy of rehearsal?
Love the ball game specifically.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, David, why don't you talk about that? That was okay. So last year we did with Indifferently Reformed The Tempest, and David here played Prospero, who, for those unfamiliar, has mountains and mountains of text. And so we had to do the ball game, and it was torture for you, David, if that's fair to say.
It was very frustrating, yeah, to say the least.
So David has a philosophy of, if I had to suffer, so do you.
So, honestly, that's fair.
Yeah. So the ball game was going to happen.
It does sound like I'm just trying to get revenge or some sort of penance on people. But what it is that one of these shows last year, I actually messed up on the last scene. I went up, I repeated a line from the scene before, and I froze completely. And I was like, wait, that was not right. Where do we go from here? And I turned around, I sent my... I can't think of the co-actor off stage and be like, you know what, this is my problem, you go off stage and we're just going to skip to something that makes sense for me. And then mm-hmm. I turned around and monologued, and it was the only reason I could recover so quickly is because these lines were super down in my head. I just had like a lapse of, I don't know.
Yeah, because the text is still the same. It's still the Shakespearean. We haven't, you know, changed the lines. We've shortened it, because you have to for the Fringe, down to get it to a nice 75 minutes, but it's still Shakespearean text. And so on the topic of improv, there might be a couple lines here and there where an actor said something funny or threw, you know, expression, and they were like, okay, let's keep that. But yeah, you can't just start improvising, try to save the scene in just modern English. It still has to kind of fit with, yeah, you know, the tone. So yeah, like David said, you kind of need a lifeline. You need to have it ingrained in you really heavily,
and that's what the ball game does.
Yeah,
that sounds awesome. I feel like that'd be a good study technique for university students.
So both of you have gone through theater school, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did you both go here at the University of Winnipeg? Or?
Yes, we did. We both went through the University of Winnipeg theater program. I graduated in 2020. And
I ended up graduating in 2022. COVID kind of stretched it out for me a bit. Mm-hmm. I was in the middle of the honors program between the first year of honors and the second year. And I was just waiting for honors to go back in person. I didn't want to do it online, so I was like, okay, we'll do other things for a year and come back. And then mm-hmm. that ultimately didn't work out for me either, so I ended up graduating just not the way I wanted to.
And the whole cast pretty much and crew is made up of UW alumni as well,
students.
Yes, alumni and current students as well. The only member, we have a 10-person cast, and the only person that isn't is our music guy. So we brought him in, an old friend of mine, to compose the music. He's going to be on stage playing live music. He's got a couple characters as well. But other than him, yeah, it's all people that either we met or just we know have gone through the program. So a lot of overlap in training. You know, we all speak kind of the same language when it comes to shorthand and, you know, direction and that. And a lot of them have interacted too, including, and like, we have some actors that are playing couples in this show that have played couples previously. So you kind of, you already have a foundation there, a comfortability, which is really valuable.
With these people that you've worked with before, do you want to give any of them a shout out in terms of acknowledgements, or the list kind of too long, you might miss somebody? Or
I mean just the entire cast and crew, like we mentioned before, Michaela, Emma, Meg, thank you for so much for being the backbone of this production. And then all the actors we have, I'm gonna go through all names, but like Ben, Liam, Madison, Eve, Isabella, Mia, Jersey, Cole, and Sam,
and Anna.
There we go. Sorry, Anna. They're all great. They've all shown us before how well they can handle their text with Shakespeare and perform on stage. And yeah, we love working with them.
So, David, back to classes. Well, during the pandemic, I'm kind of curious. Did you have any classes on Zoom, and were you acting on Zoom?
Yeah, so when I found out how honors was going to work online, it was honors consists of acting classes, movement classes, and voice classes. I was still living at home at the time. I was going to be in my tiny apartment bedroom. I had no place to move. I did not want to do voice because you have to get very loud sometimes at that and be really awkward for the rest of the people in my apartment. So I was like, you know what? We'll take a year off. We'll do that the next year. In the meantime, I knew I wanted to do screen acting and some other stuff. So I took screen acting thinking, okay, this, you know, could translate maybe better online. And I think it did. The instructor definitely had to change the course a little bit from what he normally does. But it was an experience. It really helped with learning how to self-tape, how to set up lights for yourself, even a little bit of editing your own videos and stuff. So, I mean, mm-hmm. It was still very educational.
And on the topic of COVID, I just wanted to quickly mention that was also something that kind of drew us to the script once we, you know, actually read it, is our protagonists face some tremendous life changes. They're very young. We establish that they're in their, you know, early 20s, like most of our cast is, early to mid. They have very specific dreams and plans for their life. Valentine is going to go off to Milan. He's going to work for the Duke. He's going to claim fame and fortune. Proteus, the other gentleman, is going to stay home. He has his girlfriend Julia. They're going to fall in love. They're going to spend a life together. Proteus gets forced to also join in Milan by his father, who says, "Get off my couch." And Valentine gets banished by the Duke unexpectedly. And just thinking about, okay, you have these life goals, you have these ambitions, you're young, you've been thinking about this for a long time, all of a sudden things go out the window. That kind of sounds like what most of our cast and crew went through in 2020. So that, for me, really resonated, is just this, okay, how do you react when everything you've been hoping and dreaming for just suddenly can't happen? How do you pivot? Do you become a better person? Do you go to your worser instincts? And our characters in the show definitely choose different paths in that regard.
So kind of on the topic of, like, relating to Shakespeare and, like, finding, I guess, universality in these older texts, why Shakespeare? What is the value of continuing to look at Shakespeare and his work through theater?
That is a loaded question.
It's meant to be.
I personally, for me, it's just I like a lot of classical stuff. My second major in university was the classics, mostly focusing on Greek and Roman. But I mean, like, even Shakespeare himself very much, like, took a lot of influence from those times as well. And I just like his work. I like the references in them. For me, it might sound shallow. I enjoy what I read, and I like performing and putting on those shows. I don't have any ulterior message from me. I don't know.
as an actor and a performer, it's a lot of fun, because a lot of the subtext you would have to look for is just the text. The characters in these plays, they say what they're feeling. They express it. They have, you know, monologues. They talk for a long time and go through their thoughts, and they have different thoughts, and they share it with the audience. And that's just fun. And there's archetypes, you know? So you have the heroes. You have the love interests. You have the clowns, the buffoons, which our show has at least five of at different points. The villain, you know, and all that sort of thing. And like you said, universality. These stories, whether it is Two Gentlemen, whether it is Hamlet or Romeo and Juliet, still the love story that people reference, you know, in Day to Day and Taylor Swift. There, it just is classic, right? It's based on real human emotions, and when it's performed well, it's beautiful. You know, a good actor can, even though the words, you know, you might not understand the vernacular, the specific reference, a good actor can convey that to an audience with ease. And I am very happy to say that our group of 10 have done that with great success.
I love that. Those are great answers for both of those, because we're allowed to like art for art's sake. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think what you say about when we watch Shakespeare performed well, people kind of getting it anyway. I mean, I would hope that audience members who are maybe a little afraid because it's Shakespeare, mm-hmm, can come into the show knowing that they're not just reading the text. Mm-hmm. They're hearing it. They're seeing it. They're like feeling the emotions of the performers, right?
Yes. And very fun. And a lot of that comes to us too, to, you know, like, anything can help. You know, what is the setting? Costumes tell a story of, you know, what is this character's status? So that's also a big thing that we take very seriously, is just making sure, okay, you can tell this person is higher status. You know, this is the Duke. This is the person in charge. And this is the clown. This is the servant that, yeah, just based on how they're dressed, if nothing else.
Great. So if you're just tuning in, you're listening to CKUW here, and we're interviewing two directors, David Lang and Dryden Ditz. They are co-directors of the Fringe play, The Two Gentlemen of Verona, and it starts July 17th. And maybe, do you guys want to talk about your venue, where it is? And
yes, well, we are so happy with our venue choices here. We are actually at the University of Winnipeg right here. It's very convenient for us. We're at the Asper Center for Theater and Film, that orange building off Balmoral. The fun thing is, so we did our auditions there. We have rehearsed all of the time there, and we are performing there. So our actors have they need some fresh air, I'm finding. We open on the second day of Fringe on July 18th, and we run until the second to last day on the 27th.
Fabulous. So just getting back to Shakespeare, you know, I mean, people often say that he kind of anticipates, and you use the word, Dryden, you use the word archetype. And so, you know, I think like with Shakespeare, I mean, he kind of anticipates a lot, and the structures that we see in narratives even now are still being used. Can you talk about that a little bit? Either of you?
That's on you, man.
Sorry, I can ask, you can say next question.
Yeah. It's in terms of the narrative, so like, the universality of the stories, they all, there's a lot of, you know, hero's journey. There's a lot of, the fun thing actually about Two Gentlemen is because it's one of Shakespeare's earliest works, you see a lot of the plot points he would expand on. So if anyone's familiar with, I'm blanking on it.
Twelfth Night.
Yes, Twelfth Night, the girl dresses up as a boy. That's also in this show.
Same name, so, Sebastian.
Yeah. Sebastian just seems like the typical go-to boy's name. Lots of revenge plot, friends turned enemies kind of thing, love confusion, as is common in Shakespeare. The big thing I would say for those that are uninitiated or have not really seen any Shakespeare, first off, it's very fun to go to something and be pleasantly surprised. So if you think, oh, I don't really get it, and then you find you fall in love with it, wonderful. There's a lot going on within the show that I think is going to come across really clear, because it's just very fun and it's very silly, and there are good arcs, there's some tough arcs like I mentioned earlier with where the characters go and the choices they make, but we've tried to make sure that it has a clear resolution.
That was one of the hardest parts, actually, making a clear resolution, being like, being it as one of his earliest shows, it ends very abruptly. The last scene is where the plot kind of not only climaxes, but then also it ends right away. And just the way it ends, I'm not going to spoil anything, but it's very much like, okay, how do we take this character who is acting completely like just the rudest dude you can find, and then in a manner of, I think was like in the original text, 5 lines, he's suddenly saved, he's suddenly redeemed. And it's like, okay, what do we need to do to make that believable? Because when we're reading it, we're like, that ain't believable.
So our Liam, who plays that character, we told him when he was cast, he was like, all right, we hope you're ready for this. This is the toughest character arc, definitely in this show, potentially in most of the Shakespeare canon. So it is a group effort. There's a lot of collaboration. We come in with ideas, the actors give their ideas back. We wanted to approach it and make sure that they were having their say, that they were, you know, okay, here's your scene, here's your text, let's have some fun, here's a few things we want to see, show us what else you're thinking of, and then kind of go from there. And so it really is the kind of show where there's, with a different cast, it would be completely different. So working with all of them, all the ideas they've brought have elevated it very, very highly.
So how long have you guys been rehearsing for with this group, people with the play?
So for the show, what we did auditions in February, and then I think the first official rehearsal was April?
Yeah.
Late April?
Late April, yeah.
Yeah, we wanted to make sure that anyone who was still in university just got all that stuff taken care of out of the way, which kind of backfired because the UW had that hack that happened and everyone got pushed back anyway. But yeah, we just want to make sure the projects were done. So that was our first read-through of both a normal script that we use and then also a translated script that we got the actors to just go through their lines, like, what is this in modern English and how would you say it in a conversation? Like, how, like, as a personal, you know, kind of like your own explanation. Yeah. So
it's important, if you want the audience to understand what you're saying, you need to understand what you're saying. And that's been pretty foundational. But yeah, having a 2-month rehearsal process was great because you spend the first month actually creating the show, blocking it, going through and making it happen. And then you spend another month making it better and upping the game and fixing anything that doesn't work, seeing it all together. And that for me has been the most humbling but also the most magical part, is just, okay, now it's, this is a show, we did this, you know, we all collectively did this, but like a lot of these ideas came from the two of us and it somehow works, so they're making it work.
Well, we'll see when we open.
Well, that's true. That's true. Yeah.
Terrific. You know, I didn't realize that this is a really fine-tuned production. So congratulations to you both.
Thank you.
As co-directors for the two gentlemen of Verona. Yeah, that's terrific that you've got just this amount of time to prepare, and it sounds like your process is very collaborative, which is great. You know, we're going to end the interview in a couple minutes, but any final last words?
Yes, just to kind of make it clear for everybody. So, yeah, we are part of the Winnipeg Fringe Festival, and the nice thing is that tickets are very inexpensive. General tickets are $12, although for seniors and students and anyone that is 25 and under, sorry, David, that's not us anymore, they're $10. $10 at every show. So if you have a $10 bill, you walk up to the Asper Center during one of the performances, before one of the performances, you got to make sure you're in on time.
Yeah, before we start, please.
Yes, yeah, yeah. And we have varying show times throughout. So we have some afternoon shows. We have a 9:30 p.m. show on that first Friday, the 19th. And so there's whatever your schedule looks like. There's a lot of options. It's 75 minutes. You're in, you're out. You can go see more shows. It's a fun time. And also on July 20th, everybody gets $10 tickets. So that's the Saturday, the 20th at 6:15.
Oh, amazing. That's awesome. Well, thank you both so much for being on the show with us today. It was really fun to hear more about the show and learn about your process as directors.
For sure. Thank you for bringing us on.
Derek, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, all the best, guys. Terrific, and congratulations. This being your first co-directed play, it sounds like you've been very thorough and collaborative, as I said before. And so, yeah, it should be a not to miss show. Yeah, it's interesting. I didn't even realize that Shakespeare did comedy, but this is a comedy. So it's like, so I think, I think people should definitely check it out and, support the Fringe in general. So if you're just tuning in, we're unfortunately going to end the show now, but, we've just finished an interview with directors David Lang and Dryden
Diltz.
And they're here today, and so thank you very much for the interview, guys, and yeah, we'll call the day now, but all the best, and look forward to having you back at some point with any other projects you end up doing.
Yeah, David, what are we going to do next?
Oh, man.
Should we do a tragedy? Should we do a tragedy next?
Not with our ideas.
What I tell my mom, it's a comedy if the characters get married at the end. It's a tragedy if they all die at the end. So,
I think that's a fair metric to go off of.
Yeah. How do we do both?
Ooh. Okay, we got to talk.
Until next time, we're going to leave you with some Peach Kelly Pop today for the summer heat. Bye, everyone.